أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد، وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين المنتجبين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين. For the hastening the return of our Imam, let's recite صلوات. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. Last week we covered hadith number 4 of this chapter of Kitab al-Jihad, the book of Jihad, in the great compilation of Al-Kafi. The first chapter was Fadlul Jihad and the value of Jihad. We were doing hadith number 4. I did the beginning part of the hadith, and I had planned to continue reading the rest of that hadith. It was a hadith which Imam Al-Baqir salamullah alayhi is critiquing directly to the Khalifa of the Umayyads and telling them what is happening is wrong in regards to a few matters related to jihad. It was a very interesting and intriguing hadith to read. I decided not to read the rest of it in this session because I think I need to do more work on that hadith. I looked around to try to see if I can find an explanation from scholars, ulama, who have commentaries on the book. This part of Al-Kafi doesn't have as much commentary on it as a commentary as compared to the first part of Al-Kafi. Usul Al-Kafi has a few different commentaries. A lot of different ulama have written commentaries on in the form of footnotes or hashiya, as they call it, on the side of the page. They've written their commentaries and explanations. These parts of Al-Kafi that are not in the Usul have less commentary on them. They are hadith or ahadith related to Furu'ud-Din, and that should be found in fiqh books. However, the discussions in fiqh wouldn't be looking at hadith like this, unfortunately. And that leaves these chapters and these sections, which is the majority of Al-Kafi and most of the other books of hadith, without commentary and without much commentary or explanation. There is Mir'atul Uqul of Allama Majlisi, may Allah bless his soul. He's put some things together. It's not very deep, but and it doesn't cover everything, but there are some points, and they're beneficial for those who read. And there's also Al-Wafi, another of the ulama of the period of the Akhbaris, who were both Akhbaris, both Allama Majlisi, not the contemporary term Akhbari, the Akhbarism that you may have heard of in certain parts of the world, where they condemn ijtihad and they have a certain understanding of that. That's a whole different concept, and it's not the Akhbarism that we are suggesting or saying that, because they refer to themselves as Akhbaris. That's the period where Akhbarism grew amongst ulama, and these were some of the figures. Muhaqqiq al-Kashani, who is the author of a few books of different disciplines, Tafsir, As-Safi, and then the book Al-Wafi, which is the one that has commentaries. It's compiled Al-Kutub Al-Arba'a, the four major books of Hadith, with commentary. Anyhow, these two scholars of that period have commentaries on this section of Al-Kafi. Those were the only ones that were available that I saw. I didn't find anything else. And what I found from them didn't cover the major parts. There were a couple of notes that they had on definitions of words, which could have been found in, and were found, some of them at least, in dictionaries that only required looking at a dictionary. But a commentary should be more than that. I didn't find any explanation from there, and they were difficult. I mentioned it last week. This was a difficult hadith. It's referring to matters that have happened, and it goes back and forth. What was happened, what part of it was wrong, it's a little difficult to read. And from the commentaries and the lack of explanation and the parts that they had explained, the ifs and maybe this, maybe that, showed that it wasn't only myself that had trouble with understanding exactly what the rest of this hadith is telling us. So it requires more work, and I wasn't prepared to do that at this point. So I'm going to leave it and move on to the rest of the hadith, or whatever we can read and we can, to the best of our ability, understand and present. So hadith number 5 is عِدَّةٌ مِّنْ أَصْحَابِنَا عَنْ أَحْمَدْ إِبْنْ مُحَمَّدْ إِبْنْ خَالِدْ عَنْ بَعْضِ أَصْحَابِهِ عن عبد الله بن عبد الرحمن الأصم عن حيدرة عن أبي عبد الله عليه الصلاة والسلام. In this chain of transmission, there are two problems. One is Al-Barqi, Ahmad ibn Muhammad ibn Khalid Al-Barqi, the second person, or the first name mentioned, because before that it says عِدَّةٌ مِّنْ أَصْحَابِنَا, a number of our scholars, teachers, mashayikh. Sheikh Al-Kulaini says that's a good link in that chain of transmission. Ahmad ibn Muhammad ibn Khalid, the books of Rijal say, Yarwi, or he is thiqa himself, thiqatun fi nafsih, walakin yarwi ani al-du'afa. He narrates from du'afa. He narrates from people that, according to them, were not reliable. In this case, the person who he narrates from, he doesn't even mention. He says, عن بعض أصحابه, someone. According to the common view, that makes it difficult. That would be, in a sense, مرسل. And so it won't be acceptable. The other person is حيدرة. I'm not sure, actually, if that second one is a problem. I think it is, according to the common view. I don't remember that particular name. If I'm wrong and that person has been mentioned in the books of Rajal as Thiqa, then that wouldn't be a problem according to the common view of Rajalis. But Ba'd Ashabina or Ba'd Ashabih, in the case of Al-Barqi narrating from someone, just putting it, some of his companions, that really doesn't help according to the common view. We said that doesn't have a problem. However, the hadith that is attributed to Imam al-Sadiq, we have to see. So it's a hadith with that chain of transmission, عن أبي عبد الله عليه الصلاة والسلام, that's the kunya of Imam al-Sadiq, salam Allah عليه, قال, he said, الجهاد أفضل الأشياء بعد الفرائض. Literally, jihad is the best of things, the most valuable of things. الأشياء means things. So plural of shay, which means thing. Afdal means most valuable. Fadil is something that has is valued more than something else. Afdal, it means more valuable than. More valuable than what? Everything. Al-ashya. So jihad is better than everything, in other words. But entirely, without any exception, according to the hadith, no, there is an exception. It's the best of things, بعد الفرائض, after the فرائض. The literal meaning of الفرائض is, well, it's the plural of الفريضة. الفريضة sometimes means something which is a must, an obligation, a mandate. A mandatory act would be a فريضة. And the plural of that would be al-fara'id. That Imam al-Sadiq, salamullah alayhi, at least, would not be saying that, because jihad is a fariḍa in that sense of the word. Sometimes the word fariḍa means the wajibat, the obligations that have been mentioned in the Qur'an. In that sense as well, jihad is a fariḍa, because it's not mentioned in the Qur'an once, but numerous, too many times, multiple times, multitudes of times, the Qur'an mentions the obligation of jihad. So in that sense of the word, that is a more specific meaning of the word fariḍa. Fariḍa, again, would mean something that is mandatory, that's an obligation, obligatory. But sometimes, more specifically, the obligations that are mentioned in the Qur'an as opposed to sunnah. in that terminology, which we find in some hadith, it says that if it's farida, then so-and-so, and if it's sunnah, so-and-so. It means that if you find it as a mandate, as an obligation in the Qur'an, then it has this ruling. For example, in the case of salah, there are certain acts, the certain parts of the salah that are considered farida, and if you miss out on them, then the prayer is not going to be valid. If you even accidentally, if you unintentionally, if you forget something, if it's one of the fara'id of the prayer, then you cannot you'll need to redo that. You can't just go on with that prayer or not redo it. You will have to redo it. But if it's sunnah, if it's something that wasn't done right, but it's not mentioned in the Quran, it's not part of what was in the Quran, but rather it's something that the Prophet said, which is not specifically mentioned in the Quran, in that case, you will be able to move on and not have to worry about making that prayer up. Now, the details of that for another time, another session, but the point is, there is this terminology that is found in hadith. If that is intended by al-fara'idh, the obligations mentioned in the Quran, again, Imam al-Sadiq salamullah alayh would not be mentioning that because it is one of the fara'idh. So you can't say after the fara'idh, then this is it. That would mean it's not one of the fara'idh. It's after the fara'idh. The best recommendation is this. No, that can't be. One other meaning is that, especially when used in this plural case, when it's used in the plural form, instead of al-fariḍa, referring to al-fara'idh, many times it is used to refer to the obligatory daily prayers. And if that is intended, then that can be meant, that can be said, that ba'd al-fara'idh, and it can be explained. For example, jihad in itself, although it is so great and so much has been mentioned regarding it in the Quran, in the hadith, but within the Quran it is mentioned that when you're doing the jihad, you shouldn't leave the salah, the fara'idh. The fara'idh, you should do them even though you're fighting, and there's a particular way of doing it. So that shows that the salah, the daily wajib obligatory prayers, which are referred to as fara'idh, are so important that even while you're involved with jihad, you have to work out a time to do the fara'idh. You can't skip on that. That can be intended. However, one should think of how to understand this hadith in light of some of the earlier hadith that we had. For example, it was mentioned that al-khayru kulluhu fil jihad. All of good is in jihad. And if one thinks, you will see that there's no conflict between the two. This is talking about the value of the deed for the individual and how each individual, if you want to do the best of deeds, firstly it's salah, then after that, look for jihad, look for an opportunity for jihad. That's so high, the value of it is so high that after the daily salah, which are the most important prayers of the day, the best deed that you can be involved in is jihad. That's what this hadith means. That hadith is saying, as we explained there, that all of good is in jihad, because even that prayer is preserved with jihad. If we don't engage in jihad, our prayer will be lost. So that's about the good of Islam being available to the masses, being part of society, that requires jihad. Even the prayer is in need of jihad. Without jihad, even prayer is not going to be there. We will not have prayer. And that's something that has been experienced, unfortunately, during the years of the reign of Tawgut and Kufr over all Muslim land before its liberation, at least partially, from the Tawagit, you see the prayer went down on a societal level in the amongst the believers, in the community of believers. Salah was not understood, was not taken seriously. Many people were not involved in it. Many people forgot many details of the prayer. The form of prayer changed. All of these things happened because of the rule of Tawgut, whereas there should have been jihad with the Tawagit. Because jihad was not implemented, those things happened. So there's no conflict between them. The next hadith, that was a short hadith, between two longer hadith. Hadith number 6 is one that, in terms of the chain of transmission, I doubt too many scholars considering this chain of transmission to be a reliable one. However, it is a hadith that has been narrated many times. Many scholars consider it words of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Let me read the chain of transmission. It's a very well-known sermon of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Salamullah alayh. The chain of transmission starts with Ahmad ibn Muhammad ibn Sa'id. عن جعفر ibn عبد الله العلوي وأحمد ibn Muhammad الكوفي عن علي ibn العباس عن إسماعيل ibn إسحاق جميعا عن أبي روح فرج ibn قرة. From this part it becomes less and less according to the norms of and the common and conventional views in Rijal. روح أبي روح فرج ابن قرة عن مسعدة ابن صدقة. مسعدة, if I remember correctly, as far as I can remember, and I'm pretty certain about it, is that he's controversial, but he is mentioned. أبي روح فرج ابن قرة, I don't remember him. And some of the other figures that were mentioned before this were not, but those were two chains. I think at least one of them, based on at least some views that has more followers, that would be acceptable. Mas'ada ibn Sadaqa is more controversial. Abi Rawh Faraj ibn Qurra, I'm not sure how he would be taken in terms of his reliability. Qal Mas'ada ibn Sadaqa qal haddathani ibn Abi Layla an Abi Abdurrahman As-Sulami قال أمير المؤمنين صلوات الله عليه. These Ibn Abi Layla, I have a vague memory and recollection of who this is. Again, controversy regarding, is he reliable? Do we rely on his narrations or not? Abi Abdurrahman As-Sulami, I don't recall having done research on this particular individual. Generally, the chains of transmissions of our books going back to Ali ibn Abi Talib are a little more difficult to find, the ones that go directly, not for instance Imam al-Sadiq or Imam al-Baqir salamullah alayhima quoting Amir al-Mu'mineen, the ones that through Ashab go all the way to Ali ibn Abi Talib without having a ma'soom between Ali ibn Abi Talib and the rest of the chain of transmission. I have found them to be a little more iffy according to the common understandings of Rijal. Anyhow, it is a commonly quoted sermon of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Some parts of it, I'm sure some of you have heard. Anyhow, the account says, قال أمير المؤمنين صلوات الله عليه. Amir al-Mu'mineen said, أما بعد, this is at least the beginning of this section of a sermon. It may be the beginning of after Hamd and Thana, which generally Amir al-Mu'mineen started his sermons with praise of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and sending his blessings, or asking Allah to send his blessings upon the Prophet and his progeny. So, أما بعد فإن الجهاد باب من أبواب الجنة فتحه الله لخاصة أوليائه. Verily, jihad is a gate of the gates of Jannah that Allah has opened for special awliya and friends of His. وَسَوَّغَهُمْ كَرَامَةً مِّنْهُ لَهُمْ. And He has permitted them to be involved in this, to enter that gate, which means to enter and be engaged and involved in jihad. كَرَامَةً مِّنْهُ لَهُمْ. It is Him honoring them. This is a very interesting and important wording. It's a privilege for a person to be able to be involved with jihad, and not a naqima, a bad thing, an evil thing, a horrible thing, a damnation that, God forbid, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is putting a person through or a people through. This on an individual level and on a societal level, on a community level. If a people have the opportunity of jihad, Amir al-Mu'mineen says this is an honor that God is giving them, a privilege that God is giving them, allowing them to enter the gate of jihad fi sabilillah. It's very important. Remember, we said these ahadith, we can tell this sermon Amir al-Mu'mineen is delivering during his khilafah, towards the end when people are disobeying him, especially and particularly in the context of jihad. He is calling the people to do jihad with the bughat, with people who in the name of Islam are fighting Islam and the Muslimin, are causing issues and problems, the munafiqeen like Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan. He's calling people to jihad and they're not listening, they're not getting involved. So he's starting the sermon with this, first to remind them of, if you're believers, if you believe in God, if you believe in the hereafter, if you consider your goal and objective in life to be to obtain what God has prepared in the hereafter, then you should know this is what jihad is. سَوَّغَهُمْ كَرَامَةً مِّنْهُ لَهُمْ. It is a privilege, it's an honor that God gives them to be involved with jihad. If today some of us in Hashd al-Sha'bi, in Sepah, in Hezbollah, in Hamas, in Jihad al-Islami have the privilege, it's a privilege for them in Yemen, Ansarullah, and whoever of the Yemenis, or they've united, it's not just the political organization Ansarullah, whoever has joined them, all that the Yemenis people who are involved with that, and wherever else, this is a privilege that God has given them. وَنِعْمَةٌ ذَخَرَهَا. And it's a ni'mah, a blessing that God has. ذَخَرَهَا, ذُخْر or ذَخِيرَة is to save something, to store it for someone. So God had stored this, had saved this ni'mah for them, and kept it at the right time, opened that gift and presented it to them. You have to be chosen to have the opportunity to be involved with that. So that is one thing that is mentioned in regards to jihad. Then it says, Amir al-Mu'mineen says, according to the account, وَالْجِهَادُ هُوَ لِبَاسُ التَّقْوَى. The Quran says, وَلِبَاسُ التَّقْوَى ذَلِكَ خَيْرٌ. It talks about what people can use and what God has provided them in terms of coverings, clothing, that we can use to clothe ourselves, to cover our bodies. And then it says, وَلِبَاسُ التَّقْوَى ذَلِكَ خَيْرٌ. The covering of taqwa, that is better, that's the best. And that's not material clothing, it's not limited to the concept of hijab or covering or even chastity. It's taqwa in its entirety. It's the metaphor that is used for taqwa is as a libas. Libas is something you wear, a clothing you wear. It covers what you want to cover. We have issues, we have problems, we have shortcomings, we have very ill things within us. If we listen to what God says, if we're careful with our deeds, that will cover all those ugly insides of ours. And so that's why it is, or at least one of the reasons, perhaps, that it is the metaphor of clothing is used. Clothing is used to cover what needs to be covered, what a person wants to cover and not reveal to others. Quran says, لِبَاسُ التَّقْوَى ذَلِكَ خَيْرٌ. Jihad, the Imam says, Jihad huwa libasu taqwa. Now obviously taqwa includes all of God's commands, one of which is jihad. A person is careful with their deeds, all right, generally. One of the deeds is when there is a context in which jihad is an obligation, then to move towards it is taqwa. To move away from it goes against taqwa. So the libas, the clothing of taqwa, one of the elements, one of the pieces of that clothing, one of the pieces of that fabric is jihad for sure. Here Amir al-Mu'mineen says, "In wal jihad huwa libasu taqwa." It is the clothing of taqwa. Now perhaps there can be a deeper meaning just and not simply it being part of it, because this seems to suggest it is the entirety of the clothing of taqwa. There may be ways of having that understanding. One possible meaning could be that it is so important in the context of taqwa that it's as though that the whole clothing is that. It's like if we want to use the metaphor of clothing, there are certain parts that you want to cover more than others. Generally, our clothing covers more than just the private part. But the most important part that you want to cover is the private part. So that part which is most important of the clothing, if it's there, it's like you have clothing. If you have coverings over everything else, the rest of the body is covered, but the private parts aren't covered. Well, you got something on, but you're missing the main part of the clothing. The part that needs covering most, you've left uncovered. And so in that sense, that is your clothing. If you take off all those extra pieces and leave the clothing that covers the private parts, then you have clothing. If you have all the rest of it, but you don't have that piece, then you don't have any clothing on. Perhaps what is intended by this is that is libasu taqwa. If you have this, then you have libasu taqwa. If you don't have this, even if you have the rest of it, you don't have libasu taqwa. And that again stresses on the importance of it. وَدِرْعُ اللَّهِ الْحَصِينَةِ. Jihad, besides being libasu taqwa and the first thing that was mentioned, is dir'u Allah. Dir' means armor. Dir'u Allah means divine armor. God's armor, al-hasina, that's protective. It's interesting, it doesn't say victory in jihad is dir', because when we think of jihad in this context, it's clear that Amir al-Mu'mineen is not referring to jihadun nafs, he's not referring to economic jihad, he's not referring to cultural jihad, he specifically is referring to jihad that is more clearly seen and manifest in the form of qital. As we will see, the Amir al-Mu'mineen, after describing how great jihad is, then he starts complaining about the people and them not being involved with jihad, and there more clearly and more specifically, Amir al-Mu'mineen talks about qital and fighting in that sense. So when we think of fighting, we don't see the fighting part in itself to be a protective shield or an armor, because the other word that we have here is junnah. جُنَّتُهُ الْوَثِيقَةِ جُنَّة is a shield. So there's two things that protect you. One is you wear on your body, that's called armor, generally. And then there's a shield that you hold. In the old days, that's how it was. So both are used here. جُنَّتُهُ الْوَثِيقَةِ, the very reliable جُنَّة, shield. وَثِيقَة comes from وِثَاقَة, which means to be reliable. It's a reliable shield, it's protective. And حَصِينَة, again, means protective. دِرَع, the armor. It's God's armor and God's shield that are protective and reliable. We would think of a battle that we win to be a protective shield. If we lose that battle, then we're not protected, we're actually unprotected. That's the way we look at it. Amir al-Mu'mineen says, jihad is dir'ullah al-hasina wa junnatuhu al-wathiqa. If believers get involved with jihad, them being involved in jihad is God's protective shield and protective armor for the Muslimin. This is, I feel that requires a lot of thought and for us to develop that understanding. One of the outcomes of understanding jihad in this way, for example, I'll tell you, I was going to mention it in a hypothetical way, but let's talk about it in a more practical way. There's two solutions for the Palestinian issue. One that the West tries to push, which is of course it's deception, but this is what they say. And then some people, the ones that are good people, are deceived and they're repeating this. And unfortunately, we have munafiqeen that are part of the plot of the enemies. They are part of the enemies, although they are seen as some of us. They say, well, to resolve the Palestinian issue, we need to negotiate. Negotiation means you give and take. So about Palestine, what part of it do you want to give? And what do you want to take? So one solution that has been offered for over 70 or so years is the idea of negotiating, sitting down, having discussions, and okay, let's come to an agreement, let's come to a settlement, let's settle this dispute once and for all. That's what's said, of course. There's no truth to that, and history has already told us that, because after the initial agreement, the treaty, the whatever it's called in Oslo, that the Palestinian Liberation Organization, the PLO, if I got the words right, the name accurately, Yasser Arafat, they signed an agreement. After that, Israel didn't stop sending settlers in and stealing Palestinian land. So that shows we've already experienced that. But there's still people that say that. In the case of the Lebanese with Israel, similar conversations. Syria, similar conversations. Iraq, similar conversations. Yemen, similar conversation. Like, stop fighting, negotiate. This is a trick. It is a trick. Now, in order to sell this idea and to trick people into accepting it, is that how are you going to fight? And how can you win? How long do you want to fight? How many lives do you want to lose? And will you, in the end, be able to accomplish anything? These are words that are said. Okay. If you don't believe in Allah, if you don't believe in the Quran, if you don't believe in Amir al-Mu'mineen, if you don't believe in the Prophet, you look at the scenario at hand, you look at the conditions, perhaps you can come to the conclusion that, okay, They just have too much, and we just don't have anything. Because although Muslimin are floating on oil and on fertile lands and on so much resources, the human resources are not prepared and have not, up to this point, developed themselves to a degree where they can stand a chance against Western political power, Western economic power, Western military power, and so on and so forth. Okay. But if we believe in Allah, if we believe in the Quran, if we believe in the Prophet, if we believe in Ali ibn Abi Talib, then this is what he says. He says, jihad is dir'ullah al-hasinah wa jannatuhu al-wathiqa. You get involved with jihad, God will protect you. He gives protection, not anyone else. And he will give protection if you get involved with jihad. You don't need to win a battle yourselves. You get involved with jihad, God will protect you. So anytime anyone comes and says, but we can't stand a chance against these people, those people, they have this, they have that. A person who believes in Allah and has learned these lessons from Amir al-Mu'mineen, the response we have is this. Our taklif is jihad. And if we get involved with jihad, God has promised through the verses of the Quran, He has guided us to that. The words of the Prophet, He has guided us to that. The words of the Ma'sumin, Amir al-Mu'mineen, He has guided us to that. This is very important. These are teachings that are very relevant. وَدِرْعُ اللَّهِ الْحَصِينَةِ وَجُنَّتُهُ الْوَثِيقَةِ. Then Amir al-Mu'mineen says all these great things about jihad. فَمَنْ تَرَكَهُ رَغْبَةً عَنْهُ أَلْبَسَهُ اللَّهِ ثَوْبَ الذُّلِّ. Subhanallah, these are teachings that we can again find very relevant and very true. We've tested these. Whoever leaves jihad, رَغْبَةً عَنْهُ, turning away from it, not liking it. Why رغبتنا? Why do you not like it? Whatever the reason may be. It's a case that God says you need to do jihad. Anytime Islam, Muslimin are under attack, any Muslim, anywhere where Islam is under attack, the command of God is جاهد الكفار والمنافقين. They fight you, you fight back. They don't fight you, be nice to them. If they fight you, fight back. If there is such a context, whoever turns away from it, while they can go, they have the means to do so, they don't go because they don't want to. رَغْبَةً عَنْ. What happens? أَلْبَسَهُ اللَّهُ ثَوْبَ الظُّلِّ. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will clothe them with the clothing of ذُلْ. ذُلْ means belittlement, humiliation. If you want to know why the Muslimin were humiliated by the kuffar, this is your answer, right here. We, the Muslimin, did not engage in jihad. We didn't. Our history proves that. That's what it is. You look back in history, you'll find it. Why are the Muslim countries at the mercy of the kuffar? Their rulers are puppets of the kuffar, prostrating to the kuffar, sucking up to the kuffar. Why? Amir al-Mu'mineen says, مَنْ تَرَكَهُ رَغْبَةً عَنْ. Whoever leaves it, not wanting it, because they dislike it. They don't like to be hurt. They don't like to put their life to risk. They don't like to put their life on the line. You don't want to do that? Okay. أَلْبَسَهُ اللَّهُ ثَوْبَ الذُّلْ, then go ahead, be at the mercy of the kuffar. Let them determine what your currency is worth, what your oil is worth, what your lives are worth. Let them decide whether you will be having peace and security within your borders or you'll have chaos. If they choose for Dubai and Abu Dhabi to be peaceful and have Western architecture, Western highways, roads, cars, infrastructure, everything there, then they will have, the moment they decide that we don't want that there, they'll turn it into Iraq, they'll turn it into Kuwait in the Gulf War. That was with the green light of the Americans that Saddam attacked Kuwait. This is clear. Whenever they want, wherever they want, at their mercy. If they choose, like, we like this piece of land, we'll develop it, then you'll see that there. If they don't want it, they want you to live in ghettos, that's where you're going to get. This is called dhul. This is humiliation. فَمَنْ تَرَكَهُ رَغْبَةً عَنْهُ أَلْبَسَهُ اللَّهُ ثَوْبَ الذُّلِّ وَشَمِلَهُ الْبَلَاءُ. God will engulf them, encompass them with al-bala, calamity. وَفَارَقَ الرِّضَى وَدُيِّثَ بِالصَّغَارِ وَالْقَمَاءِ. فَارَقَ الرِّضَى, it seems, what is in line of, and in light of what was said, and in line with the other line, the other phrases, sentences that were before this, is that they will be leaving the state of pleasure. They won't see, they won't be pleased with life anymore. فَارَقَ الرِّضَى وَدُيِّثَ بِالصَّغَارِ وَالْقَمَاءِ. They will be humiliated with being small and insignificant, unseen. They kill us. Muslimin are killed by the dozens, by the hundreds, by the thousands, by the hundreds of thousands. And they just mention a figure, they move on. One American loses their life, like one American soldier, one American citizen here or there was killed. The whole world. The attack in Paris, in a Western European capital, a few dozen maybe, I don't think the death toll was reached even 30, if you remember the two incidents. They were wrong, that's not the point right now. But the point is, 30 people maybe maximum died. The whole world was in tears. Even Muslim countries, Muslim capitals were coming out mourning. Oh my God, 30 people were killed. 200 Palestinians just got killed. What, do you have the same response from the people of the world? Yeah, alhamdulillah, because of the revolution, because of the Quds Day, because of Imam Khomeini, what has happened is that more and more people are aware, they're coming out condemning Israeli atrocities, but is the way people feel towards Muslimin, Palestinians, when Palestinians die, a lot of these people that are out there, even on the streets, condemning what Israel is doing, they feel like petty towards them, these poor people. But when the French people died, oh, it's a whole different thing. See, this is what happens. دُيِّثَ بِالصَّغَارِ وَالْقَمَاءِ. Humiliated with being small and low. وَضُرِبَ عَلَىٰ قَلْبِهِ بِالْأَسْدَادِ. Then other things happen spiritually. Their hearts are going to be sealed. وَأُدِيلَ الْحَقُّ مِنْهِ بِتَضِيِّعِ الْجِهَادِ. حَقْ will turn away from him. My understanding, it was another definition given, udila min, but from what I read, seemed like they hadn't considered the word al-haq here. Udila al-haqqu min, Haqq will be taken away from him, will be turned away from him. He will no longer be on the path of Haqq. His heart will be sealed, and he will no longer be the flag bearer of the truth or Haqq, because he left jihad. That's what happens. Anyone who does that, that's what happens to them. Individuals, organizations, nations, whenever it happens, it happens to them. Any organization that fought the Zionists, but then they left jihad, this happened to them. We see that. Any nation that fought the Zionists, fought the Kuffar, but then stopped, we see that. And the ones who didn't, we see the result of that as well. وَسِيمَ الْخَسْفَ وَمُنِعَ النَّصَفَ. Again, from what I can remember, سِيمَ الْخَسْفَ is again speaking of belittlement and humiliation. وَمُنِعَ النَّصَفَ. People will not treat them justly. That's what happens. Again, we're seeing this. The words of Ali ibn Abi Talib, which are divine words. He's a divine leader, a ma'soom. He saw what the Prophet saw, heard what the Prophet heard, but he was not a prophet. What he says are exactly what the Prophet said. He received all of that, and the Prophet told him, after me, you're the one who is going to continue the exact same message, not as a prophet, as an imam. That's guided by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. These are truths that we find, we've seen it. Then the imam turns to the contemporary matter at hand after giving these general teachings about how great jihad is and what happens to those who leave jihad when they're supposed to be involved in it. He says, وَإِنِّي قَدْ دَعَوْتُكُمْ إِلَىٰ قِتَالِ هَؤُلَاءِ الْقَوْمِ لَيْلًا وَنَهَارًا وَسِرًّا وَإِعْلَانًا. And I called you towards jihad of those people, referring to Muawiyah specifically at this time, because the other Jamal was already taken care of. The incident of Jamal was already taken care of. Nahrawan, the battle with the Khawarij, was an extension of, in part of the greater battle with Muawiyah. And in fact, Amir al-Mu'mineen was telling the people not to engage with the Khawarij. The main problem is in Sham, Muawiyah, let's go deal with him. This will be taken care of once Muawiyah is taken care of. They didn't listen. So this is referring to Muawiyah. I called you towards jihad of Ha'ula al-Qawm, those people, Laylan wa Naharan wa Sirran wa I'lanan, at night, during the day, in private, in public. What was your response? وَقُلْتُ لَكُمْ, and I said to you, أُغْزُوهُمْ قَبْلَ أَن يَغْزُوكُمْ, they have plans to attack you. It's clear. The enmity is there. Their plans and plots are there. You should go with an iron fist and have a preemptive attack on them, which means what Amir al-Mu'mineen did. When we call it preemptive, Amir al-Mu'mineen showed us. Let me explain this. Ughzuhum means to fight them, battle them before they battle you. So what, we start the battle? No. What this means is you prepare your army, your military, you go there, and you tell them to overpower them to stop this. If they engage in battle, then you're ready. Well, you tell them not to do that. That's what Amir al-Mu'mineen did in Safin. Muawiyah didn't say, let's fight. Amir al-Mu'mineen wrote to Muawiyah, leave. He wasn't doing that. He disobeyed Amir al-Mu'mineen as the Khalifa of the Muslimin. And he showed signs that he wants to start a conflict with Amir al-Mu'mineen. Amir al-Mu'mineen didn't wait for him to gather an army to come and fight and say, okay, they fought us now. No. He gathered his troops. He went towards Muawiyah. But when he arrived there and Muawiyah found his way to where the army of Ali ibn Abi Talib was, Then they have stopped. Amir al-Mu'mineen didn't say, oh, let's go and kill them all, behead them all. No, Amir al-Mu'mineen said, we need to have conversation, talk to them, stop this. Why are you doing this? Muawiyah, why are you doing this? People that have gathered with Muawiyah, if you leave, this battle will not take place. Why are you supporting Muawiyah in this battle? Have I done anything wrong? All of those conversations to prevent. Let's allow the Quran. Amir al-Mu'mineen introduced this idea at the beginning of it, in order that there's no bloodshed. We're all Muslim. Let's allow the Quran to be the judge between us. They didn't want that. They started the battle. Amir al-Mu'mineen. But see, the difference is, as Amir al-Mu'mineen says, some people, those who don't want to be involved in jihad, cowards, like, okay, let's not do this, let's not do this. We know they're preparing. The leader said, in the context of the war, Saddam, as the scene figure, otherwise it was the US and the USSR and the French and the Germans and the British and all these, many, many governments were involved in that. Allah Khamenei many times has mentioned the reason why they were able to capture and take a number of the Iranian cities, the most important of which was Khurramshahr or Muhammara in Arabic, was because we saw the signs that he wants to attack. We didn't do what Amir al-Mu'mineen said. We didn't go with our army over there and show teeth, show our readiness. Say, look, if you dare move towards this border, you're going to get... We're not going to wait until you cross that border, which is the policy of the Islamic Republic after those shortcomings that the people that were involved in that time as prime ministers and presidents and what have you. They didn't listen to Imam Khomeini. They didn't listen to Islamic teachings. But the policy... and the believers moved in that direction. They got stronger. They're prepared. This is how it is. You're not going to wait until they do something. You take your drone. You cross into a zone that is our zone, which happened with the U.S. drone. Warnings, a couple of warnings. Don't enter. They acted as though, oh, this is stealth, and you know they can't even be detecting it. Look, get your drone out of here. Don't want to listen? All right, that's it. Shoot it down. We're not going to wait until you start using weapons, taking those drones, and either you use them for spying, surveillance, intelligence, what have you, or to drop bombs and stuff. We're not going to wait for that to happen. There's a warning. In our territorial airspace, if you enter... We'll warn you, if you don't listen, we're not going to wait until you actually cross our borders. That's Amir al-Mu'mineen says, I قلت لكم أغزوهم قبل أن يغزوكم. You battle them before they start battling you. Don't go on the defensive. Open your eyes. You're not just attacking innocent people. They're planning to come towards you. It is stupid to wait for them to prepare, and you're not preparing, you're not ready for battle. They attack you like, oh, what do we do? No, you see, keep your eyes open. They're doing this, they're planning, they're plotting. And prepare yourselves. Go over there and show them teeth, show them your readiness. And many times that will create a deterrent, and they will not even engage in that battle. أغزوهم قبل أن يغزوكم فوالله and Amir al-Mu'mineen explains by Allah ما غزي قوم قط في عقر دارهم إلا ذلوا by Allah a people are not battled at all في عقر دارهم inside their home if you wait for the enemy to come inside your borders inside your home That will not happen, illa dhallu, except that they will be humiliated. If you don't take the measures you need to take to defend Islam and the Muslimin, and they come into your home, you're going to be humiliated. And again, this is what happened when the Muslimin did not stop the kuffar at their borders and the kuffar came in. Dhallu, that's... With the humiliation that occurred, was this? فَتَوَاكَلْتُمْ I told you to do this. What was your response? فَتَوَاكَلْتُمْ You said, well, this person will go, that person will go. Everybody referred someone else. This is called tawakkul. This guy says, he will do it. The other guy will say, he will do it. And what ends up happening is no one will do it. فَتَوَاكَلْتُمْ وَتَخَذَلْتُمْ حَتَّى شُنَّتْ عَلَيْكُمُ الْغَارَاتِ Until these غارات occurred. غارات were the attacks, like piranhas. I was thinking, this is what they started doing after the Battle of Siffin. And that makes it clear that this is after the Battle of Siffin, where Amir al-Mu'minin kept telling the people to, now let's go and fight Muawiyah again. They kept, as Amir al-Mu'minin said, فَتَوَاكَلْتُمْ And then other things that will be mentioned, different excuses. And so what happened? Muawiyah, in an outright battle against Amir al-Mu'mineen, in conventional warfare, in the sense of, you know, two armies meeting, Muawiyah lost that battle. He had to come up with a deceptive plan, and he used the presence of munafiqeen in the army of Amir al-Mu'mineen in a battle that was militarily won, unfortunately was lost because of what happened there. This time, after that scene, Muawiyah sent different parts of, different segments of his army. Instead of going to battle the army of Amir al-Mu'mineen, they started going the corners and biting this piece off, biting that piece off, attacking this little corner, that city, that town, creating insecurity similar to what Daesh did or what the CIA did with Daesh in Syria and in Iraq. And that's what the gharat are. حَتَّى شُنَّتْ عَلَيْكُمُ الْغَارَاتِ وَمُلِكَتْ عَلَيْكُمُ الْأَوْطَانِ Your cities, they started ruling over you. They prevailed over, they won, and they took those, your homes from you, and they started ruling over those homes. هَذَا, and the Imam mentioned as a particular example, هَذَا أَخُ غَامِدْ A brother of Ghamid, it's one of the Yemenis according to one of the commentaries. I'm not sure if it was the Al-Wafi or Mir'atul Al-Uqul. They explain this, Ghamid is one of the Yemenis tribes, but there were various Yemenis tribes. Some of them were in Kufa, and other Yemenis were in Sham. This brother of Ghamid, this Ghamidi brother, this, in other words, this tribe, this person from Ghamid, the brother of Ghamid, someone, a member of the Ghamid tribe, it seems, what Amir al-Mu'mineen is saying. قَدْ وَرَدَتْ خَيْلُهُ الْأَنْبَارِ What we know, the province of Al-Anbar that we know today in Iraq, in the western side of Iraq. It's either that region or a city in that region. And Al-Anbar refers to storage. It was a storage place. It's where they stored ghallat, the wheat and barley and what have you. That's why it was called Al-Anbar. His troops, his horses, Akhu Ghamid, that member of the Ghamid tribe, he has entered his troops. Khayluhu, literally means horses, but it means his troops, obviously, his troops have entered Al-Anbar. وَقَتَلَ حَسَّانَ ابْنَ حَسَّانَ الْبَكْرِ Amir al-Mu'mineen's governor of Al-Anbar was killed by that person. وَأَزَالَ خَيْلَكُمْ عَنْ مَسَالِحِهَا The troops that you had over there that was protecting the borders, your borders, so that they won't attack, all of that was destroyed by Akhu Ghamid, that commander of Muawiyah's fleet, who was a member of the Ghamid tribe. وَقَدْ بَلَغَنِي And then, in regards to that condition in Al-Anbar, this is what happened. He says, وَقَدْ بَلَغَنِي أَنَّ الرَّجُلَ مِنْهُمْ كَانَ يَدْخُلُ عَلَى الْمَرْأَةِ الْمُسْلِمَةِ وَأُخْرَى الْمُعَاهَدَةِ I've heard that a man of theirs, in other words, it's not just one, they're men, these troops, كان يدخلوا, it's in the city, these are where civilians are. They would enter the homes, على المرأة, a woman, المسلمة, who is Muslim, والأخرى المعاهدة, a non-Muslim, either way. Women who are the ones that need to be protected more, who are defenseless in the city, these women, Muslim and non-Muslim, their troops went to فَيَنْزِعُ حِجْلَهَا وَقُلْبَهَا وَقَلَائِدَهَا وَرِعَاثَهَا. And they steal, they take, they grab their jewels from their feet, from their necks, from their ears, from their hands. They steal it right there. They just come in, whatever they see, they take right off the body of this Muslim or non-Muslim woman who is under the protection of the Islamic government. And then, مَا تُمْنَعُ مِنْهُ إِلَّا بِالْإِسْتِرْجَاعِ وَالْإِسْتِرْحَامِ. And there is no way of defending her. She is not defended in any way except for istirja', saying, إِنَّا لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّا إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ. والاسترحام, asking to be merciful, please don't kill me. This is the only way that she can be defended, is her just calling for help and nobody being there to respond. She has to ask this savage, violent man that has walked in her home stealing things from her, asking him to have mercy on her. ثُمَّ انصرفوا, they do this and then they leave, وَافِرِينَ, having won and taken whatever they wanted. وَافِرِينَ مَا نَالَ رَجُلًا مِّنْهُمْ, وَافِرِينَ, they take whatever they wanted, come and go with the riches. مَا نَالَ رَجُلًا مِّنْهُمْ كَلْمٌ وَلَا أُرِيقَ لَهُ دَمٌ. This happens and then not even a word is said to them. And no blood is shed. They just came in, killed whoever they wanted, destroyed the troops, destroyed the horses, came into homes, stole what they wanted off of women. And they didn't have any defense. And then they left. Nothing was said to them. And no blood of theirs. Nothing. Nobody did anything. Amirul Mu'mineen at this point says, فَلَوْ أَنَّ مَرَأً مُسْلِمًا مَاتَ مِنْ بَعْدِ هَذَا أَسَفًا مَا كَانَ بِهِ مَلُومًا بَلْ كَانَ عِنْدِي بِهِ جَدِيرًا. If a Muslim man hears of this and dies out of the pain of hearing what happened there and nobody did anything in that regard, he will not be maloom. He will not be, fortunately the word doesn't come to me, nothing negative, for want of a better word. This isn't the right equivalent. I don't know why the word isn't coming to me. Nothing negative. There's no blame. I think that's one of the words. There's no blame on that person for dying just because they heard this. Not only is there no blame on that person for dying, بَلْ كَانَ عِنْدِي بِهِ جَدِيرًا. That person is actually, it's worthy of such a thing for a Muslim man to hear this and die because of how serious this matter is. I guess the time is up and we have come to a point where we can leave off. Hopefully, inshallah, if we don't hit another obstacle as we did with the last hadith, inshallah, I'll read the rest of the hadith in the next session. Walhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen.